Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Alton. My name is Joy Heft. Welcome to this place. This is a home where no revealed truths are promoted and no scripture or human being accepted as infallible. This is a place for searching for truth, but we are believers. We believe in intellectual freedom. We believe in justice. We believe in compassion and concern for each other and the whole world. We believe in commitment to those ideals which makes us caring and active in the struggles for human dignity. We are Unitarian Universalists. I offer my welcome to you, and in particular to those who are first-time visitors. We welcome you and especially encourage you to join us after worship for coffee and conversation. Information about the church is available from the new member desk during coffee hour and from any of the people gathered here. We invite you to fill out one of our visitor cards found in the back of your hymnal and place it in the offering plate or give it to an usher. In the pulpit today, we have Dee Evans.
Do you have an answer?
Oh, you can just say there's going to be a rain.
I didn't hear what you said, so.
People have asked me, yes, there will be an RE after church.
We begin our service this morning with a prelude. Our call to worship this morning comes from Malal al-Din Rumi. This being human is a guest house, every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and attend to them all. Each if there are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, retreat each guest honorable. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. Then greet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each guest has been sent as a guide from beyond. And as Mary Weber lights our chalice, please join me in reciting the words. We light this chalice, a symbol of Unitarian Universalism. May it remind us of the divine spark in all of creation, the power of love to heal what is broken, and to be grateful for life's blessings every day. Please rise as your bodies and spirits allow and join us in singing Blue Boat Home.
Far away from the road.
Good morning.
Morning.
We have our wonderful Wonder Box. Yes, it has air in it. No, it doesn't have a rabbit. But I can give you a hint. In some children's stories, this object could be considered magic. Any guesses?
A wand.
A wand. That would be a good one, but it's not a wand.
It's a magic lamp.
Ah, close. Very close. Okay, I won't keep you guessing. A magic carpet. Now, in children's stories, if you read them about magic carpets, it's to escape, to get away from danger or disaster. But if you really look at what I have in my hands, this isn't really a carpet. It's a rug. It's washable. Rugs don't have magic associated with them. What they have is the familiar rug pulled out from under you, and you fall, and you're down, and you're looking up and wonder what happened. Sometimes it gets worse than that. Sometimes when disaster happens, or catastrophe happens, or something horrible happens, you're not only down looking up, suddenly the floor gives way from under you. And as Pema Chodron says, you're falling with no place to land. Now, we often think children don't meet that kind of disaster. We think that they escape it. But I'm going to do what Sunshine said, and I'm going to share a story from my life when I was a child. 5 years old, I remember looking out the front window of my aunt's apartment and watching two women in gray capes with white masks over their face help my mother get in a black car. And I watched them take her away. And I didn't see her for 2 years. As a little girl, I felt that the rug was pulled out from under me and the floor had given away. The adults did a horrible job in explaining what was happening. I pieced together that what my mother had was this thing called tuberculosis. And at that time, the very few antibiotics they had didn't work. The only thing they did was isolate you. So yes, children can have the floor fall out from under them. They can have the rug pulled from under them. So can adolescents. When I was a school psychologist, they referred a young lady to me, freshman, very depressed, very anxious. When I got to the bottom of what all of this was, it was because her very best friend, who had been her best friend since they couldn't remember when they weren't, suddenly didn't want to hang with her. And they were the only two that went to this particular high school from the grade school she was at. She was friendless. She felt that disaster had happened. She even used the phrase, "The rug's been pulled out from under me." Now, we finally figured out, you know, there's the nerds, the jocks, the cheerleaders, and this was just simply the normal freshman thing of kids separating themselves in group. But she felt the rug had been pulled out from under her. When I was in my 20s, you know, in your 20s, you never have a lot of money usually. You're just starting your career. One of my friends, you know, the last hired, first fired, layoffs come, she's laid off. 2 days later, her landlord's knocking at her door with a bunch of legal papers. Says, "Your lease is up in 2 months. We are vacating the building, and you're going to have to move. So she has no job, no prospects of getting a job, very little savings. Her family lives in another state and they weren't on good terms. And she now has to move. No money for first and last month's rent. She felt like she was free falling into disaster. You know, as adults, everything that happens. You know that people lose jobs, they get in terrible car accidents, their children get sick, or their children, through no fault of the parent, goes on to drugs. You know those disasters. You know that suddenly you're faced with a health problem that you never thought you would have, and it influences your entire life, and you feel, due to that, your whole life is spinning out of control. Our parents die, and you would think we're prepared for it, but we're not really. I had a friend. Her parents died within 6 months of each other, and then her sister got in a car accident and died. Talk about free falling. Talk about having the rug pulled out from under you. I had another friend. Very, very happy life. She was in her 70s, had grandchildren, just really looking forward to maybe in the next few years having great grandchildren. And the whole family, except her, got killed in a car accident on a vacation. That's free falling into disaster. We've all experienced it. But I asked myself, if you are a Unitarian Universalist, do you pray? Do you call upon some God or something? And I didn't have the answer to that. But I finally came up with one. And we'll talk about that later. But right now, and I gotta look at my script. Right now, as we're thinking about disasters, we're also going to think about joys and concerns. So I invite you to come forward to share your joys and concerns by placing stones in our water bowl. Stones are below the bowl. You can take them to represent your joys and concerns and put them in the bowl. Please come up this aisle and go around back out that aisle. Okay, please come up if you have joys and concerns. As you think about your joys and about your concerns, feel your body in the pews. Feel your back against the pew, your bottom against the pew, your feet on the floor. Take a deep breath in as you become aware of your body. Breathe in. Breathe in all your joys. Breathe in and let that breath go from the top of your head to your feet. Now, let that breath come from your feet and breathe out all your concerns and send them out into the universe. Continue breathing in and breathing out. Thinking of all people's joys in the entire world and all people's concerns in the entire world. Breathe in and breathe out quietly. Breathe in and breathe out. Become aware that you're in this room. If your eyes aren't open, open your eyes. Be aware of the person sitting next to you, the light, the noise, the buzz off in the corner. And come back into this room, this church, here and now.
We receive from this church the opportunity to explore meaning, purpose, and value in our lives. How does the money you give reflect what you receive? As you give to our plate this morning, you are invited to consider how your spiritual life, that life of meaning and value and purpose, are enhanced through your giving. This morning's offering will be greatly received. May it be joyfully given.
Thank you.
Please join in reciting the offering blessing. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and these our offerings. Now please join us in singing hymn 1053, How Could Anyone? And we'll follow the slides. I'm not sure if it's one or two slides, two times, but. Our reading today is from When Things Fall Apart, Hard Advice for Difficult Times by Pema Chodron. When things fall apart and we're on the verge of we know not what, the test for each of us is to stay on the brink and not concertize. The spiritual journey is not about heaven and finally getting to a place that's really swell. In fact, that way of looking at things is what keeps us miserable. The first noble truth of the Buddha points out that suffering is inevitable for human beings as long as we believe that things last, that they don't disintegrate, that they can be counted on to satisfy our hunger for security. From this point of view, the only time we ever know what's really going on is when the rug's been pulled out and we can find anywhere to land. We use these situations either to wake ourselves up or to put ourselves to sleep. Right now, in the very instant of groundlessness is the seed of taking care of those who need our care and of discovering our goodness.
So I ask myself the question, when we're groundless, when the rug's been pulled out, do Unitarian Universalists pray? And I'd like to answer that question from two different aspects. One is our tradition, and the second one is our seventh principle of the respect for the interdependent web of life. So I'm going to start with the first one, our tradition. If you go to the Unitarian website, I found what to me was a sort of surprising statement. And that was, we came from two radical Christian traditions. And these two traditions, the Unitarians and the Universalists, united in 1961. Now, I knew about the 1961 Union, and I knew that they were traditions that were Christian, but I didn't think of them as radical. But you can see where we came from. But there's something else about those two traditions. They were theist. Yeah. When I came to this church, I was warned, be careful, don't use the word God. And I remember the stir when our last minister prayed to the Father, Mother, God. That prayer, the use of God, comes from our Unitarian Universalist tradition. There are Unitarians who believe in God in the very traditional sense, a God out there that they pray to. I don't know if this is still true, but when I lived in Chicago, the Oak Park Church was known for having a theistic bent, the Unitarian Church in Oak Park, Illinois. I don't know if they still do. But it's part of our tradition, and people who are theists pray. Now, if we are a welcoming church, I think that this, it should be just fine to use the word God in this church, and we should accept that path from people who want to follow that path. And I think if they want to pray, that should be as acceptable as other traditions are in this church, as Buddhism, paganism are. So yes, Unitarians do pray, particularly the theists. Now, some theists believe that God is not out there, Unitarians, but God is within, and they are praying to the God within. And that is their part of their theistic tradition as Unitarian Universalists. So yes, Unitarian Universalists pray, and sometimes it may be to a God. But what about those Unitarian Universalists who don't believe in a deity, external or internal? Do they pray? I wondered about that because I found myself in intensive care, calling out to the universe, do something, find some doctor, do something, while my husband lay there, teetering on the brink of death. A friend of mine, whose wife was his caretaker, found himself waiting in a waiting room in a hospital while his wife was receiving a life-saving procedure, a life-saving operation. And he said, I am an atheist, and I sat in that waiting room, and I prayed that she would live. He was free-falling into disaster. I was free-falling into having the rug pulled out from under me. And we both prayed. And we're Unitarian Universalists. So the question becomes, what do we pray to? What kind of prayer is that if you don't believe in a deity? And I've been wrestling, believe it or not, with this question for about 2 years. And then it came upon me, the interconnected web of existence. This is a very interesting concept. It's interesting because it's not just part of our Unitarian Universalist heritage. It's also very scientific. And it's scientific on several levels. We all heard, and I'm not going to go into all of these stories, but I'll just keep it simple. The butterfly flaps the wings over here and a storm happens over there. We've all heard how that is interconnected. We all know that if we pollute in the United States, it spreads all the way to China, and if China pollutes, it spreads all the way to us. But there's more about this interconnected web that really fascinates me. If you ever read quantum physics, and believe me, I am no expert in this, and I am like taking baby steps in trying to understand it. They talk about how the world is connected at a very fundamental level. And sometimes what I read, I don't totally get. These are scientists who are using math and scientific principle to say, we are connected. So this isn't just it isn't only a Unitarian Universalist idea that there's an interconnected web. There's another side to this web. There's something called scientific synchronous multiple discoveries. Now, what does that mean? Okay, that means here's a scientist over here, here's a scientist over here. They're not talking to each other. And they both come up with and discover the same thing. Now, when I read about that, I thought, is that really true? So, of course, you know, you can Google anything. I put that in, and there is a list on Google of the huge number going way centuries back to the present of these scientific synchronous multiple discoveries. Now, how can that be? How can that be? People don't talk to each other, they both discover the same thing. There's a couple of explanations. One is the time is right. History has evolved, everything's evolved, and it's just right for people to discover the same thing. The philosophy, theology, math, science, history, everything comes together and this scientific discovery arises out of it. You know, when computers happened, it was time. There's another way of looking at it. If I were to hook each one of you up to a machine, your brain would give off electrical energy. And some scientists posit that that thinking affects the universe. Now, not all scientists believe this, but some do. Some very famous scientists. And that amazed me. But then I thought about it from a psychological point of view. And I thought, wow, if you think that our minds limit what we can do and how we perceive the world, it could also be the other way around. The world influences our mind. And it is a revolving interconnectivity. Okay? Just like if I walk out there and the coal plant is operating, I have trouble breathing because that interconnected web, the interconnected web of thought may also exist, some scientists posit. Psychologically, that's sound. If you think about it, if I know absolutely nothing about snow, I don't have a clue. I move from the deep south to Alaska. I am not going to know how to dress, how to cope, how to drive in it, how to even move in snow. Because I only experience it maybe once, twice, and a couple of times in my lifetime. And it isn't very deep. I don't know how to cope. My mind is closed to coping with snow. Very simple example. I'm going to give you a different kind of example. One time in the hospital, I was asked to do a group, and I said, I'll do a group on coping skills. Rather, relatively easy group to do. Don't know what made me say that. Actually, when I was asked to do it, I just said that off the top of my head, and usually my response is, no, I'll go think about it and I'll get back to you. It just popped out of my mouth. And later I thought, well, I don't even know if I really wanted to do that. So I started holding the group. About the third session in, I get knocks on my office door. It's patients telling me that they had been thinking about their lives and their lives were screwed up and they didn't know how to unscrew them. What they needed was coping skills. Now think about this. There's several patients on the unit not knowing what they need, but they knew they needed something. And suddenly this pops out of my mind, out of my mouth rather, that I'm giving a group on coping skills. Something was going on there. What I am suggesting is that when the rug is pulled out from Unitarians that don't believe in a deity, that what we do is we open our minds to the interconnected web of the universe. That we can ask that universe to send us the solution because we are interconnected. Because we do belong with one another. If you ask the universe, psychology, some psychologist, some theory may walk into your life. You see, when disaster happens, things happen to us. The first thing that happens to us is we don't breathe really well. If you've ever been in deep mourning, you're going to find out you get really tired. And the reason you get really tired is when you're in deep mourning, you don't breathe real well. If you've ever lost a job and you're anxious about how you're going to survive, your chest tightens up and it affects your breathing. One of the things psychology does is it teaches you you should breathe. It teaches you, believe it or not, to exercise. Why? Because when you exercise, you have to breathe. And what happens when you're breathing? The oxygen gets to your brain. So if you call out into the interdependent web, it may send you someone to teach you something about breathing and exercise. It may also teach you to send somebody to you to tell you you need to watch your thoughts. When we're mourning, when we're jobless, when we're anxious, when that rug, this rug, has been pulled out from under you, what we do is we go in a spiral of thinking that makes it worse. We can think ourselves into depression. It's called the cognitive triad. I'm bad, the world's bad, and you're bad. And actually not have a depression, and we think thoughts like that every day, and we will develop one. Wow. When we're anxious, I'll never get another job. I'm too old. It just isn't going to happen. They're going to cut Social Security. I thought my pension was going to be taken away. I went into the spiral. I don't know how I'm going to get a job. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I wasn't the only one. I'd go to the union meeting, and we'd all be talking this craziness, and finally somebody said, stop! The universe sent us something. But I also asked the universe, send somebody to do something about this, because I'm not coping well. Big psychologist wasn't coping well. But the universe sent somebody. In the word of stop. And you know who it came from? Our union lawyer. When you ask, you get. It was said someplace, somewhere. I think it was the Bible. Now, that's psychology that you can turn to in this web of existence. If you pray, you can go after that. But there's another place you can go. It's called meditation. Now, you can learn it either through a non-denominational way. In other words, it's not connected to any kind of religion. Or you can learn it. Hindus meditate, Buddhists meditate, Christians meditate. You can use one of those forms of meditation. And when that rug is pulled out from under you, your emotions are going crazy. My emotions go crazy. Everybody's emotions go crazy when the rug is pulled out from under us. And here's the interesting thing. We used to think if you could change your thinking, you would change your emotions. Research is beginning to question that. Aha, maybe the Buddhists were right first. Control your emotion, and then you control your thought. Aha. How do you control that disaster thinking when you're free-falling in meditation? You're sitting there and your anxiety is going crazy, your depression is going crazy, your upsetness is going crazy. You sit with the thought. You sit with the feeling. Now, the thought you're going to look at, and you're going to pretend it's in a cloud and it's just going to go off to the side. You're going to watch the thoughts, but that feeling is going to sit there. And you do the opposite of what you think. You don't run from it. You just sit there with whatever you're feeling, the anxiety, the depression, the fear, the upsetness. You sit there, and you'll notice something after a while. You'll notice that it's fleeting, that something will sneak in there when you're not quite as anxious, you're not quite as depressed, you're not quite as upset, you're not quite as fearful. You'll notice that, like the thoughts going off one after another, the emotion will go by too. Now, if you don't know how to meditate, I would suggest you say to the interdependent web, send me a meditation teacher. And you know what may happen? You'll get something in the mail, and it'll be a CD, and you'll have your answer. Because you put it out into that interconnected web that you need help, that you're free-falling into disaster. Pema Chodron says, expect life to be suffering, and you will handle disaster better. Now, that may sound very negative, but the truth is things change. They change every single day. Everything I love disappears. Nothing is permanent. And when I began to accept that, I realized that I can call out to that interdependent web, pull that from that web what I may be missing at that time. So if I expect that, I can call out. I can pray to that web. She also says something else. Use your pain to develop tenderness for life. Let the pain of the world touch your heart. That's what you do when the rug has been pulled out from under you. I suggest that when things happen in your life, when the rug has been pulled out from under you, when the floor opens under and you are free falling into catastrophe or disaster, that you breathe not only a prayer of help, you breathe a prayer of thanks that you are a Unitarian Universalist. Say thank you, because as a Unitarian Universalist, I can fall back on all kinds of things. I can be a theist and pray to a God, and that is okay, because I am a Unitarian Universalist. If you're free falling into disaster and the rug's pulled out from under you and the floor goes, say a prayer of thanks that you are a Unitarian Universalist. Because you can turn to a science like psychology and use whatever you want, because you are a Unitarian Universalist and nobody's going to tell you that's wrong. When you're free falling into disaster, breathe a prayer of thankfulness, because you are a Unitarian Universalist, because you can use meditation, any form of meditation, Christian, Buddhist, Hindu, non-denominational, and no one will criticize you, because you are a Unitarian Universalist. But there's one last thing when you're free falling into disaster that I suggest you be grateful for. And that is this congregation right here, right now. Because we are such a supportive congregation. Can we solve your problem? Can we make your spouse resurrect if your spouse dies? No. Can we, if somebody wants a divorce, can we change their mind? No. Can we get you a job? No. We can't even help with money because we don't have enough for this congregation. But you know what we can do? We can be there, and we are there to support one another. Go to the internet. Oh yeah, we have problems with the internet. But look at the other part of it. How many times have I seen on our face page, particularly on UU Sisters, but also on a regular page, "My life is a mess right now. Pray for me, sisters," and we say we will. Other people will say, "My life is a mess right now. Send me good juju or send me good vibes," and we say we will. Be grateful that you belong to this congregation, and it is our place, and we support one another. Remember, when you free fall into disaster, you are a Unitarian Universalist, and that is a thing to be grateful for. Now, let us rise as your spirits and body allow and join in singing 1021, "Lean on Me." Yeah, I picked it. Did I?
There you go.
This service would not have come together if it had not been for Joy, for Ben, for Rachel. They did all the slides. She picked that beautiful reading. Ben volunteered to do all this, and Rachel worked out all the hymns, so I want to thank everyone. Please turn and face each other. Know that this is your community. We are the people who support you on your path and who provide a welcoming community. Smile at each other and silently wish everyone well. Now please be seated and enjoy the end of our service as Rachel plays a prelude. Or praise the prelude, yes. Praise.